Hi guys.
How good
Are
evening.
you? It's good. It's good. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
I do believe the pleasure is all ours.
Oh, that's sweet.
Do believe the pleasure is all ours. So, first and foremost, how are you? How are you enjoying the weather? Are you ready for Christmas? What's it like in the Warner household right now?
We've got half an hour, right? That was
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, summarize.
yeah. Skip Christmas. Everything is good. All the kids are fed, and we finished football for the week. So yeah, we're good to go.
Okay, brilliant. So, I kind of want to start at the beginning.
Yeah.
So, before your son went for a trial at an academy, what was your footballing experience in terms of like the family and his? What was your your lived experience beforehand?
Okay, so between me and my partner, we've got five boys. So there was a lot of football going on at various levels, mostly grassroots. Yeah, but even at grassroots, with five boys, you're doing a lot of traveling, a lot of driving, a lot of training, a lot of games. And so, yeah, there was a lot of football going on, but not much academy experience, if I'm honest. We'd had went so predominantly the story revolves around Bruno, who's now 15. When he was in year six, we had sort of experiences with Chelsea and their academy and trials and things like that. And at the time, it caused Bruno to really pull back from football. He didn't enjoy the experience, too much pressure, made himself, sick, wasn't feeling it. So pulled back for a few years. And then it was year nine when he said, actually, I want to really go for it. I'm in the zone now. And so I supported that, and he chose the teams he wanted to play in, to put himself in the right position, to be in the right, have the right eyes on him. That was all his doing. And so that brought us to kind of near enough nowish.
So going back to kind of like his time at Chelsea, what was it about kind of being in an academy that made him feel, or made him feel the pressure, that made him feel like maybe it wasn't for him?
I think there was a lot going on in year six. Year six is a big year anyway for any kid, when they're 10 and 11. And it was a lot of trials. It was weeks and weeks on end. Cobham, where Chelsea train, is, about 45 minutes from us. So it was a lot of travelling, a lot of those things, and a lot of pressure on himself. As soon as all your friends find out that you're trialling at Chelsea, that piles on the pressure of what if I don't make it? And yeah, at the time it just wasn't for him, and that was cool. I was really proud of him that he wanted to back away. And as it was, it kind of coincided the next year with COVID, and everything came to a stop anyway. So it was kind of a natural pause in his football journey.
So fast forward, we have COVID. He finds himself a grassroots team. He's playing. He gets invited to another trial. Is that how it happened?
So playing for his county, playing for Sussex, Sussex Schools, which it's that's a great pathway for loads of boys to get seen and scouted and things. And randomly Colchester, so League Two, Cat Two Academy, contact us out the blue. I'll be honest, I had no idea where Colchester was. It's one of those things I had to Google and find out that Colchester were really interested in him. He's 6'3", he's a striker, he stands out, especially at 14, 15. So yeah, we went up to Colchester to see what it was all about. It was all an adventure, an experience.
And what does that journey look like for you from, traveling from your house to Colchester, and how many days a week are you were you doing this? What does that look like for you?
Really long. That's what it looks like. It looks really long and boring. So we live just outside Brighton on the south coast, and Colchester on a really good run, and I'm talking 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
A very rare run.
Very, very rare run is one that magic 1 hour 30.
That is a little game. But the
Yeah.
realistic
The
route,
realistic on a Wednesday night when you're trying to get to training at 6 o'clock, it's anywhere between 2 and 3 hours.
and that's one
That's
way.
one way. And then obviously you've got training in the middle for 2 hours, and then you've got about it's 2 hours on the way back because it's later, traffic's died down. So yeah, we were looking at that was causing it was taking up whole days. Because by the time I've organised everything beforehand, the dog, dinner, lunch, everything, then pick Bruno up from school, done that, and get back at 10:30, it's a whole day.
Yeah. And how many days a week are you doing that? Or were you doing that?
We were doing that, so not including games, just for training. We were doing training 1 to 2 times a week. So we were missing training because they were aware how far away we were.
Yeah. Okay. And so you're there, you're doing this mammoth, you know, journey 2 to 3 times a week, depending on games and training and whatnot. And he's on a 6-week trial, 8-week trial?
How long? He got offered, I don't even know how long it was, because they offered him an academy contract after about 3 weeks, three, 4 weeks.
Incredible.
So yeah, it didn't run its course. He got offered a contract quite quick.
What was his schedule like in terms of, would he do any extra training? So if he was training twice a week, say, with the club, what would he do the other days?
So he was having one-to-one sessions locally, so we could keep it as local and do as little travelling in that time as possible. And he was also still training with his grassroots team as well. So he was getting a bit of sort of fun training with the grassroots team. He was doing a couple of really structured sessions with the academy team and one-to-ones in between as well, just to work on the little things he wanted to.
Yeah. So obviously, just it's really like we're really grateful to have you. And what we're speaking about today is kind of what I would say is kind of like a serious implication or concerning implication as a parent. Like, you know, Dan and myself are also parents. We have young kids. So what was Bruno's experience? And I guess what is the conversation that we're talking about today?
So it all started off really good. You know, we got welcomed into the club, shown round. It all seemed really positive. Because we were so far away and it was kind of Easter holiday time to start with, they invited him up to train with the A-teams so that we could go up there and experience the club more on kind of a full-time basis. But so instead of getting little snippets here and there, he could get a real feel for the club.
Yeah.
So he trained with the A-teams. He loved it. It was great. He loved the group of lads. He loved the whole environment. And he could see himself settling into that environment. Then after Easter, it just went downhill. So he was then just training back with what were then the under 15s. And I just noticed he didn't want to go to training. And it wasn't just because of the distance. He was getting moody. He was shutting down, not talking. He was not himself. Even his friends at one point commented to me, you know, Bruno seems really sad. And it's not always easy to get stuff out of a teenage boy. They don't do much talking anyway.
Yeah.
But when you are stuck in a car for 2 hours on a return trip after training, you've got more of an opportunity. And it just became apparent that he was dreading it. He didn't like it. And I'll be honest, for the first few weeks, I wasn't getting out of the car. I was staying in the car or doing my own thing whilst training was happening. Yes. I started to get out of the car to hear what was going on and see what was going on. And it was negative. It was really, really negative. None of the boys seemed to be having fun. Not that it's all about fun, but there wasn't any energy. The snippy comments, the snipey comments, the nasty comments.
From coaches, parents, players?
First of all, I noticed it from the boys, because it's easy to notice it from the boys. You know, there's 15 of them. They're absolutely everywhere. You can pick up on what they're saying. They're not saying nice things to each other. If someone makes a mistake in training, they're immediately on it. Now, I get they're all each other's competition. It's dog eat dog. But it seemed really nasty.
Okay, so this wasn't a case of boys being boys in European.
Yeah, as I said, we've got 5 boys. I know banter, I know, you know, things that boys say, and it was taking it a bit too far. And even some of the other mums were saying, oh, that was a bit unnecessary. And it was doing it to make themselves look good as well. But then the more I watched and the more I listened, the more I saw that although the boys were saying these things, it wasn't being nipped in the bud. It wasn't being picked up on by the coach. the man in charge was, if not equal, more negative and toxic himself. He was an angry man in charge of a lot of children. And he wasn't stopping the negative environment. If anything, he seemed to be thriving and feeding it.
Which would make the boys feel that they can still continue with that tone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And especially the boys that have been there a few years and they're feeling under threat. If they're not being pulled up on that nasty comment they're making, they're just going to carry on doing it. If they can get away with it, if they can get this new kid out by saying these things and no one seems to be paying any attention, then go for it. So at no point, you know, none of those boys were nasty boys. You know, they're all there under a great deal of pressure, all going through their own things. This was down to the grown-ups in charge that had a responsibility to
care,
nip it in the bud.
Well-being.
Yeah, exactly that. The well-being, not just how they're playing football, but how they are in the head. Because if they're not happy, then they're not going to be playing good football anyway.
Yeah. Can I just kind of just stop us there to not play devil's advocate, but to provide a perspective, so to speak. So Dan and I spoke earlier, and I don't know if you heard the conversation we were having, but we were talking about another League Two club who was paying their, who is advertised for their under 18s manager to earn, you know, 22 to 24 grand a week. $22,000 to $24,000 per annum. So imagine being a coach who, how many boys were in the group, would you say?
17.
So 17, 14 year olds?
15 by this point, but yeah. You
know. 17, 15 year olds with an assistant, I presume. So yeah, 17, 15 year olds with an assistant earning, and I'm theorizing here, earning, you know, 24K annually at best, working, you know, every single hour of every, of each and every day. That can put a lot of strain on the, even the coach. And again, not to condone that type of behavior by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's really important with hearing your story, because you're educating a ton of people that are hearing this story now. But also, as I said, our job is to inform and educate. And the better we understand the environment that we are, you know, putting our children in or helping our children be in, the better the decisions that we can make while they're still minors. So I just wanted to say that, not to condone any
behavior. I think the best thing to come from this, what the parents need to understand is there's so many parents that will not, they're chasing a dream. Their child is there, they're going to become a footballer, and they've just got tunnel vision. So they can hear everything, what's happening, they can see everything, but they're just looking at, is my child going to make it as a footballer? What can I do as a parent to make? And that's my biggest concern for parents that are out there and that may not see this, is that they will see stuff every single training session if they're lucky enough to see their child train. However, they're not taking a step back, because there's a lot of, and I'm not just saying it's the dads, but the majority of games that I go to, it's always the dads that will take the players there, and they're just so focused on, he's messed up, he's not done this, he's not, instead of seeing my son, a child in this environment, how is he being treated, how is he developing? But a lot of parents will be just like, they're chasing the dream. So I think, how fortunate was your son that you was able to see the bigger picture?
And
I think, you know, talking about what coaches get paid, it compared to what the clubs are bringing in and what they're paying sort of various other athletes, it's mental. They're not getting paid enough for the pressure they're under. And, you know, it is crazy. They're underpaid, they're overworked, they're, the expectation on them is huge. And that's why, you know, I think he was, the build-up in this particular coach, I mean, he was swearing and angry at kids and, you know, what the F is wrong with you and all these kind of things coming from him.
Wow.
He clearly wasn't in a good place himself. But as the grown-up, it's up to him to remove himself from that situation, deal with what he's going through before putting that on other people.
Absolutely.
And I think coming back to what you were saying, Dan, that I think lots of parents, or boys in particular, and athletes, just want that dream so bad. It's a case of put up and shut up.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, coaches like that thrive and get away with it for that very reason, that there's such a power imbalance that these coaches and managers have, that they can almost get away with it because no one will say anything, because they don't dare rock the apple cart when it comes to getting that place, getting that contract, getting that scholarship. You know, oh, I don't want to say anything to upset them, or that might ruin my child's chances. Meanwhile, your kid's mental health could be so impacted negatively, and not just your child. If you're noticing your child, chances are it's affecting other kids within that group whose parents might not be there. You know, lots of the boys at this particular club at Colchester, they were arriving on a minibus from the train station. So they'd get picked up and brought to training. The parents aren't there to see it, to hear it.
Yeah.
And by the time the kid gets home, they're probably too tired, go to bed, don't want to talk about it. What about all those kids?
Yeah. So we're at a point now where you've started to watch training, you've started to notice the snide comments and remarks. Other parents are noticing it. The coaches noticing it, but not doing anything about it. What happens next?
So I contacted, I think it was, or I don't know the titles, it's like player care, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Contacted him because, you know, he'd given it the large at the pre-season meeting of, we'll never tell someone to grow a pair. We'll never tell them to do this. We're all into mental health. All the speech that they have to give, because that's the box they need to tick. I called him, told him what was happening, told him the things that were being said, which I'll be honest, I'm not repeating. Because I don't know how much I can swear and say things. So I don't want to be too cryptic. I don't want people thinking, well, she's not actually saying what was said. But,
oh, no, but I think you're saying enough. I think in the comment people are really getting it.
And basically he said, oh, is this not something he can brush off? I was like, well, okay, that's not the PowerPoint you gave me 2 months ago. So I contacted the recruitment guy who had been really proactive, was really good. He was our first point of contact with Colchester. And from there, the ball was put in motion. But to cut a long story short, because I'm aware of time, ultimately, Bruno decided he wanted to leave Colchester. He didn't want to be in that environment. He couldn't see it getting better. Even the coach eventually went under internal investigation and was forced to resign and left. After the internal investigation was carried out for numerous instances. It wasn't just things that I pointed out, you know, the sports development coach and even like the coach's coach had seen certain things that weren't great. So he eventually left, but Bruno decided that he didn't want to be there amongst those boys. He didn't want to go back into that environment. And I'm proud that he took a step back and said, yes, it's my dream, but actually it's not worth it at that cost.
I think that goes to show your relationship sort of with your son and how you've developed and built his character, because I can guarantee there are 90% of scholars, young academy players that would just put up with it because they're trying to chase their dream. So I think it shows parents to have that relationship with their son or daughter where they feel open enough to go to them. They're not going to disappoint them. They want to be there as a parent rather than as an agent or a, yeah.
But at the same time, I think it's a huge privilege to be able to do that as well, because for a lot of the boys there, that is it. You know, Bruno is really lucky, really fortunate, really privileged. He has other options, you know, beyond whether it's football, whether it's athletics, whether it's academic, whatever it is. Whereas so many of the boys in the system, they have to make it. They have to almost put up, shut up, deal with it, suck it up, brush it off, because they need to get out of whatever situation they're in and make it. And those are the boys that, or, you know, girls, athletes, that I would like to hear that there are other options or you can speak up.
So you've now taken Bruno out of, you know, that academy, and he's playing his football. How is Bruno doing now?
So we didn't write off the academy system. Mm-hmm. We thought it can't be this bad everywhere. Mm-hmm. Within a couple of weeks, Cambridge United called, and they were like, We know we're just as far, but we've heard good things about Bruno and we would like to show him that it can be different. Mm-hmm. And it really is. He's been training with Cambridge for nearly 2 months and he's loving it. From the moment he walked into their changing room at training, and bear in mind when he was training at Colchester and no one was happy, it was deadly silence. They wouldn't even turn on the auto lights. They'd all sit there in darkness, not saying a word. He walked into the Cambridge United change room and they're all playing a game with a digestive biscuit. They're all having a laugh. You know, it's what you want to see from boys. You want to see them being happy. You want to see some energy. Yeah. You want to see something. And then they go out and they train. They're a team. That's what I would expect. That's what I would hope that they can get from football. Yeah. So yeah, he's at Cambridge and really enjoying it.
That's fantastic. And one of my good friends and former teammates is actually at Cambridge now. So I will tell him to make sure that he looks out for Bruno. And if he sees him, make sure he tells him hello.
It's a great club. Yeah.
And what advice would you have for parents that aren't in a similar position in terms of they feel that they're just how, what advice would you have for parents to help support their child that makes that step up from grassroots to academy or a more elite team so that they can be a parent instead of trying to chase the dream and be an agent and make it as a football player?
I think it's really hard, isn't it? Because I think we all want to see our children succeed and success is so often framed as making it into an academy and making it as a pro footballer. Mm. I think keep the conversation as open as possible as you can with teenagers. You know, I relied on Bruno telling me what was going on, telling me how he felt so I could give him the tools to resolve that situation as best as he felt he could. So just keep the conversation open.
And how did that change? Sorry.
Go on.
How did that change sort of through puberty, through more schoolwork, distractions outside, sort of once they reach that certain age? Because there's a big stat in football. Once players reach 14 years old, you lose about 38% of players that are in grassroots football from under 14s up because there's distractions, puberty, schoolwork. How did you notice the difference at that age?
With Bruno?
Yes.
Bruno seemed to focus more than ever on sport. He went all in. Whether that's athletics or football, he became one. He focused himself 100% on football. That was what he wanted. The distractions. What distractions?
No, amazing.
So listen, on that note, because I am very conscious of time, I think this is a great kind of place to wrap up the conversation, but before we do, while I have you, Jess, I would just like to say, I'd like to commend you for your parenting. As I said, I'm a parent myself. I've got a 13-year-old, so, you know, not too far in age from Bruno. And the fact that you've equipped him with skills to be able to make such courageous decisions is a testament to you and the job that, you know, you're doing. And, it, you know, if you look back in the comments, it's like, Jess, incredible. Well done, Jess. Great parenting, Jess. You know, well done, Bruno. I think, yeah, you really are Bruno really is a testament to the work that you're doing. And as we said, this platform is about educating everyone, but most importantly, parents, because the people on this platform that will be watching, the community that we've built, predominantly are parents that have minors, that are kids that are, you know, wanting to go into career academies or in the, youth development or foundation phase. And having them hear from someone such as yourself who has had a child, who has a kid who, you know, has had a negative experience, but has been able to bounce back from that and find an environment in, you know, in which he can thrive, I think is just, you know, it's an incredible story. And I just want to say you are an inspiration to me as a parent. I think you have definitely helped educate and inform a lot of parents who are currently watching. So thank you,
Gareth. Thank you. And actually, just something that you kind of raised there, I want also parents to know that if one club isn't right, another one might be. You know, you don't have to stick with one club. I think That's what, you know, shop around.
Yeah, definitely. Dan, anything from you for Jess?
No, I think it's just this community, all the sort of the guys on the podcast, Portia, myself, Darius, we can give our experience. And it's just amazing that the parents can learn from you, because you're at a different stage to what myself and Darius are. We coach elite athletes, we've played football. However, the stage that you're at is a different stage to what we're at. So you're talking about experiences that we've not experienced yet. And I think it's all well and good us talking about football development and what we've been taught in education courses through the FA. But in terms of the hands-on experience, I'm learning as a parent on the job. So it's kind of, yeah, it's very refreshing, and it's amazing for us to hear from you. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. You can kick me off now if you like.
It's our pleasure. But I must say, quickly before you go, I feel like, yes, I feel like we only touched the surface of this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Sean, I know you're expect a DM, because this is a conversation that needs to be had more consistently, more often, and, you know, with more people watching. So yeah, Jess, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been amazing.
Thanks, guys. Have a nice evening.
You too. Take care.